Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. We've got a packed show for you today, so we're just going to jump right into it. At the back end of the show, we'll hear from Satsuki Ina, who was born in the Tule Lake Segregation Center, a maximum security concentration camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. In late March, she helped organize a protest, including dozens of World War II camp survivors at the South Texas Family Residential Center, a current concentration camp for Central Americans and other immigrants and refugees in Dilley, Texas. Furious and despairing about the actions of the current administration, the survivors raised the slogans, "Stop repeating history," and "Never again is now." When 120,000 Japanese Americans were rounded up in 1942, there were no protests. The survivors staged this action to let those imprisoned by the Trump-Pence regime know that they will not themselves be silent as history repeats itself. And opening the show up, I'll be talking with Andy Z, the spokesperson from Revolution Books in New York City and an advocate for the new communism forged by Bob Avakian. And he's in Los Angeles as part of the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. We'll be talking about the situation faced by humanity after 2 years of the Trump-Pence regime, and the steady consolidation of a fascist form of rule in the U.S., and in particular, what's happening following the completion of the Mueller investigation and the release of a short summary by Attorney General William Barr.
You know, one thing that people should really know is that what happens here is basically a situation where, you know, what we're looking at today is not stuff that's brand new. What we're looking at today is stuff that has gotten repeated and repeated and repeated. And in particular, the importance of people learning lessons about this, the importance of people learning basically what's the nature of this, what's going on with this. And right now we're going to be joined by Andy Z, okay? And as I said earlier in reading this, Andy Z is a spokesperson for Revolution Books New York City and advocate for the new communism forged by Bob Avakian and part of the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. Andy, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing all right. Hey, you're out of breath, man.
Run down the hall and get on the air. Okay.
This is why people pay for live radio. See?
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, look, there's a hell of a lot that's actually happening in the world today. There's a hell of a lot that's already going on, you know, and there's a lot that people are trying to figure out what's going on and what to do. And I wanted to start with you because you've been right in the middle of this, in the middle of all this. And tell people what, you know, basically this is the release of the Mueller, of the Barr's report, the release of Barr's four-page memorandum on the Mueller report and all that has happened since then marks a significant juncture. And that's fairly important. It does mark a significant juncture. It's not just sort of, well, this is the news, oh my God, it's shocking, whatever. So what's actually happened and what are the implications of all this?
Well, with Mueller's four-page summary of the report that Mueller submitted, you know, it is a major event, and what it has done is it has legitimated in a significant way the Trump regime, in part because the Democrats made this a major point of going after the Trump regime. And as such, in the wake of this, you certainly saw Trump extremely unleashed, particularly in going after his opponents in the Democratic Party, and also threatening tremendous attacks on the masses of people, which at the present time, for a short moment, at least the rest of that fascist regime has pulled him back to a bit where, in other words, he initially threatened to go ahead with trying to undermine Obamacare completely. And then he also threatened to close the borders, both of which he said, well, we'll wait till after the election. But I don't think this is strictly and even principally electioneering. This is part of how, in fact, a fascist regime comes to power and the necessity to actually remake society. So what happened with this report is that, you know, the most salient part of this is that he was absolved or found that there was no active collusion with Russia and no indictments on that account, which was the major thing that was being built up. At the same time, Barr reported that Mueller said there was not evidence for prosecution on obstruction of justice, but that the report did not exonerate him on that tack. And that might be the more significant part, potentially, of what might be in the report. So that's what's happened in terms of the actual report. But then there's what's been the response to that, too, which is another part of the package. And then what does it really mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, that you used, I mean, and you used this word, and, you know, a lot of times the word fascist, you know, and a lot of times people, you know, I mean, look, fascist has been thrown around a lot, but this is actually much, you know, over the years, right? People who, for various reasons, but this is actually a leap, I think, in actually what is happening in relation to this, to, in this country, politically, what's happening, and in the world, and the impact it'll have on the world. Let's just dig into that a little bit.
You know, I was a co-initiator of an organization called Refuse Fascism, and we said from the very beginning that we're not calling Trump a fascist because it's the baddest insult we could possibly hurl at him. But in fact, it describes something very specific that can be looked at and determined by the nature of a regime. And we've also said from the beginning that it's the Trump-Pence fascist regime. And there's, you know, a way to look at this. Look, fascism itself is a form of rule of this system. It's one way that those people who run the system can run society. When capitalism and imperialism, well, capitalism developed, initially it was in opposition to monarchies. And the right of the individual was exalted at the very time that the individual was being freed from the legacy of serfdom and slavery and these kinds of things. Although slavery still existed for a long time under capitalism. But there was a whole set of ideas and a set of governance. And so in general, capitalism tends to rule through some form of democracy for those on top and with the participation of the masses of people voting to give their approval either to legislators or in the United States to an executive. But that's not the only form capitalism can rule. It can rule through a much more open form of dictatorship where essentially there's the threat and the actual carrying out of violence against the masses of people in a qualitatively worse way than is normally carried on against select groups. It can be one where the civil rights and democratic rights, such as they are for the majority or for a certain section of society, are just eviscerated, taken away, separation of powers, taken away, full power to an executive branch, and at the same time, extra legal forces are unleashed and employed to terrorize and enforce the nature of the regime. So this is what fascism is. And you see all of these elements in the Trump-Pence regime, and you've seen all of these elements develop over a period of time. So there's a question of how did we get here? But this is qualitatively different form of rule, not more of the same. More of the same system, yes, but not more of the same kind of rule.
Well, when you say that, I mean, look, I'm sure a lot of people are going to say, well, wait a minute. Now, we've had jerks in the, you know, and actually, I mean, look, I remember when Reagan became president, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember standing outside of a house in D.C. with a friend who looked at me and she came out and she said, what's going to happen? We have a Nazi in the White House. And, you know, there's this kind of stuff that actually, you know, you look at like then, and it almost seems innocent in relation to what's happening today. But this whole idea of how many people actually look at something like what Trump is doing. I mean, Trump presents it as he's got this macho thing. He's going out. He's rallying the cowboys and, and he's doing all this stuff. And he's talking about we won't be kicked around anymore. And he tells lie after lie after lie after lie that with just complete abandon. And then people pick it up and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, you know, and it seems like there's something that's really coming to gel there. But it's also something that, you know, I think a lot of people look at it and a lot of people who actually should know better look at it and say, it's sort of OK. We got two more years of this, a year and a half more of this. You know, we can deal with this. We can, you know, he's a jerk. He's an ass. But, you know what? We can deal with that.
Well, I think the way to look at it is actually there actually is a qualitative change. And of course, you know, people who look at all the things you're talking about, the lying, the clearly lunatic psychosis of the man, but being outrageous, being inconsistent, lying, being the way he is not a disqualification for being a fascist leader. In fact, you might make the case that it's a job qualification. Look at Mussolini, look at Duterte right now in the Philippines, look at Hitler themselves. himself. These are not disqualifying factors to this, but the question is why do people look at a Ronald Reagan or a George W. Bush and say, well, these guys are fascists? And now when they're actually confronting a fascist regime, do they back off it? That's an important question. One is there are people who have been concerned about justice, and there's people who are right under the boot of this system, millions of people in this country, who realize that there's been a whole history of exploitation and oppression of people in this country. Look, when people who, and this gets to also why some people can't actually accept a fascist regime in this country, is because they think there's something exceptional about America, a country of democracy and freedom, and it is just a cycle of elections. But here's the thing. You've got a country that was founded on slavery and genocide. You've got a country that was founded on white supremacy that goes along with that slavery. It becomes the coherent ideology of it. You've got a country that was founded in its very beginnings on the conquest of the land and the genocide of Native peoples and the doctrine of manifest destiny. These are pillars, along with patriarchy, of this system. And so when people say, could fascism happen here, they're not looking at the whole nature and the history of this country. And then there's more proximate, more recent causes over the last 50 years, which maybe we can get into, that begin in a certain sense in a qualitative way with Reagan ascending to the presidency in the wake of the 1960s. And you can look at the roots of the actual forces in the ruling class behind Donald Trump and Mike Pence that have their genesis in the period of the 60s and in opposition to the social changes that were happening. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could get into that a bit more.
Yeah, in just a second. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Andy Z, and we're talking about Trump and fascism and what the hell is going on here and what needs to be done in the face of all this.
Well, I think you saw that in response to the movements of the 1960s and to the upheaval that was coming and the changes in the nature of international relations and the workings of the system. You began seeing a current develop within the Republican Party, a fascist current. And initially, by 1980, at the time of the election of Reagan, you also had the development of a whole direct mail campaign and forging of a political form of Christian fundamentalism as the door through which people were coming into a more fascist movement. There was a fellow named Vigoret, who's actually still around, I believe, who said that abortion will be the door through which people come into a full program of white supremacy. And also, he didn't use the word white supremacy. But you saw this develop through the 80s, through the 90s, a political form of particularly of Christian fundamentalism. And of course, you had all along strains of Klan activity and white supremacist organizations. All of this, and militia movements developed, all of this has been going on through the 80s, the 90s. There was a certain coalition coalescing with the Bush regime after 9/11 and in their election. But right now you have a situation where they've come to power. Might have been surprised everybody, including Donald Trump himself, that it came behind him. But here's somebody who was willing to break the rules. And, you know, I think I would really recommend to your listeners that they go to revcom.us, the website of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And there's a film there, a talk by Bob Avakian called The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. A better world is possible, where he gets into the longer story of the roots of fascism in the formation of a capitalist system. But then he goes much more deeply into American history and this current situation. And one of the points he makes there is that one of the things Trump had to do in order to get elected and for this to come together, and the forces behind him were also of this mindset, is there had to be an alliance between what he was able to cohere and this Christian fundamentalist, what we've called and others have called a Christian fascist movement. And therein lies the alliance between Mike Pence and all that he represents and Donald Trump. And this is an extremely organized force that's all the way up into the military, the police forces, the intelligence agencies, and there's contention with all of this. And that's one thing people do have to understand, that it's not some group of people sitting down, some Illuminati or some conspiring group of corporation heads who figure all this stuff out. They're actually contending and colluding with each other. But right now, things are very sharply joined at the top of society as to how they're going to actually cohere their system when the makeup of the U.S. population has changed, when the economy is such that the needs of huge swaths of masses of people can't be met at a time when globalization has torn the cohering economic and political and geopolitical relations apart. There's competition from other contending superpowers. And all of this has created tremendous problems for the people who rule this country. And one way to resolve that has been what's represented by the Trump-Pence regime. And that is to change the policy internationally, to change the policy domestically. And that is contending with what have been the normal ways U.S. Imperialism has gone for over a long period of time since post-World War II, which is more or less represented by the Democrats. They've already hollowed out the what they call mainstream Republicans from the Republican Party. So what you see, and this gets concentrated in this Mueller report, is very sharp contention between two sections of the ruling class and the Democrats who are being opposed by Trump, and including in the wake of this report from Barr, largely conciliate and collaborate with this and certainly do not mount any effective opposition because they too have the interests of the system at heart. Whereas the masses of people have a very different interest, but largely they've been bamboozled, they've been diverted, they've been told to rely on this Mueller report breathlessly with a certain amount of delusion by Rachel Maddow and CNN. And on the other hand, they've been channeled, including by those who came out to protest by the Women's March the day after the inauguration, into fully electoral politics to think this is just another swing of the pendulum when, in fact, something far more sinister, far worse for the masses of people is actually at play here.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because even just a quick thing is, you know, I was thinking about this when you were talking about the military. And I remember back when George W. Bush was in power and there was all this stuff going on in Afghanistan and all these other places. And there was a question of whether, you know, somebody did a survey of the military and how much of the military leadership was actually fascist. You know, and it was very heavy because people didn't really recognize that until that thing was done, where people saw that, you know, it went up and down the officer corps. You know, where you had fascist after fascist after fascist. And people look at this country sometimes as being immune to the kinds of things that you're talking about, that there's checks and balances. You know, how many times have you heard those empty words? You know, and it's it really means something in terms of how people even it's a way of consolidating all the fascist forces. On the other hand, it's also a way of sort of getting people to go along with things, even if they are somewhat, you know, upset about the direction. They still look at it. We can change it in November.
There's two things to understand there. One, in terms of this, the release of the Mueller report and the whole reliance on this is one of the things that happened with this Mueller report and people being focused on that and collusion with Russia. When, you know, in one sense, you know, in terms of that aspect, that if he didn't probably have to collude with Russia, they were already doing it. He had to step aside and let it happen. But there was actually something deeper in terms of Russia involved there, which we don't actually know because the report hasn't been released. But certainly he's been trying to tear up the previous alliances. But one of the things that happened here is you had people rejoicing over what? Progressive people, people who knew better, people who've been opposed to U.S. war. Well, we've got three generals, adults in the room here protecting us. We've got Mueller protecting us, the former FBI chief under who? Under Bush. You've got Barr, who's got an entire history of engineering cover-ups as the Attorney General. I think he's the one who actually covered up the Iran Contra thing under Reagan. But even more fundamentally here, there's a question posed for people. One, we get to this later on. What do we do to actually drive out this regime and stop this? It's not to rely on 2020. But two, if something like this has been developing over the last 50 years, and you do have some understanding of what the generals do, what the CIA does, what the U.S. government does, the nature of the system, why, in fact, the U.S. has military bases all over the world, why it's engaging in wars in Yemen and in six different countries, including in Northern and East Africa. Why, if this is what it's done, why, if these wars have been started under and carried out under both Democratic and Republican administrations, and you see all this, why, if you could elect a fascist, government attempting to impose fascism on the U.S., which they've not yet succeeded on, to power, why would that not cause you to question the whole system? And the reason I'm in Los Angeles now and could race into the studio and find myself down the hall when you wanted me on the air was because I'm here on a tour that says, you think you're woke, but you're sleepwalking through a nightmare. This system can't be reformed. We need an actual revolution. We have a tour that's getting organized for a revolution, because when you have a system that's doing this systematically, and you have millions of people who hate the things it does to the people, and who could be roused to understand the nature of all this, and could be organized for in times of intensifying crisis for the ruling class and for the masses of people, where you could actually carry forward an actual revolution and bring about a far better society. This is something that people need to be looking very deeply into. And again, going to revcom.us and looking into the work of the leader of the revolution, Bob Avakian, who's actually developed a strategic approach that's never been developed before as to how you could actually win in a country like this. And even more than that, has developed and written a constitution for a new actual socialist republic in North America that would really go set society on the road to complete human emancipation. It's an incredible document, and too often people don't actually go to this and say, well, what do I think about this? And let me see what these people are saying, because the world and people are suffering a world of hurt. It's a world of a very deadly cancer that's about to tear up the whole planet, including what they're doing around climate change. And here's somebody, and here's an organization that says there is a cure for this. So people need to avail themselves of this and find out about this revolution and come and talk to us, and let's get into some arguments about it. Can you reform this system or not? And if you can't, then you're forced with a choice. Either we're going to live with this, and some groups of people are going to tinker around the edges, or we're going to actually get organized and make a revolution. Now, there are things to do between here and there that involve driving out this Trump-Pence regime, and that's very important. We can come back to that. But there are fundamental questions posed for people in this country right now. And if you stand aside from looking at the possibility of complete radical change, and if you stand aside and say, well, this Trump-Pence regime, he's a fool, he's a clown, and you rely on the people who actually do shill for this system, people like MSNBC, The New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, then you're going to be complicit in something. And don't come to me or anybody else and say, I don't know how the German people let that happen, because that's what's going on right now, because you have concentration camps on the border right now, families being ripped apart. This is a horrific situation, and things are gone to a point where there's no reason for any complacency or complicity, and yet millions of people, that's right where they're living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really important. And it's also important, and I want to have people have a chance to give you a call and talk with you about this, and, you know, ask you questions, pose your questions. But I also want to, I think this point that you said, where you were talking about, you know, you're part of the Get Organized tour for an actual revolution, the need for revolution, and you're also a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism. And there's a need in a sense, clearly there's a major need. I believe I'm with you on this in terms of what needs to be done overall. But then there's also a need today for, you know, because I look at this and I keep thinking, you know, you can have some big demos. There was a big demonstration downtown yesterday, you know, and it was sort of like, you know, that was against Trump and was doing all this other stuff. But
I heard there was 80 people at it.
Oh, I heard more, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So maybe
no,
was,
okay.
Okay.
No.
Whatever. But even 80 people,
yeah,
you know, coming at it. There's a thing there, which, one, if it's 80 people, it needs a...
I'm not denigrating that there's 80 people right there, except in the fact that you're facing something like
we
this.
We need a lot more.
You,
yeah,
need, a, you need 80,000
yeah, yeah, yeah,
people.
Right. Exactly. So, but basically what I was going to ask you about is, like, what do people, you know, people have to... How do we actually bring together the forces that, one, are going to run this bastard out of power? You know, how does it? Because there's things going on where he's not just sitting back and sort of chuckling about all this stuff. He's actually, these things that he's been doing, that speech when you were on last time, the speech that he talked about, you know, what was happening with, he was on a tour talking about, you know, celebrating his you know, exoneration. And going out and really mobilizing all these yahoos in Michigan and all these people that were actually, you know, you watch the thing and you see these people standing behind him and they're all like smiles and cheering, and they're normal everyday people, but they're people who are getting behind a Nazi. So he's not just organizing these forces, you know, he's not just talking to these forces. There's actually a political organizing going on to a certain degree. And how do we deal with this?
Well, look, I think we have to see that this country is a country divided. it has been that when you form a country where a good chunk of the country is organized around slavery and the rest of the country is actually involved in its economy is being actually driven by that slavery, that's for the first 90 years of the Republic. That's what it is. And then you have that intertwined into the system. You have a whole section of people in this country for whom this white supremacist privilege, if you will, or position in society is what's actually cohering them. And in a certain kind of, in a situation that prevailed for a period of time, that would come to the fore, not come to the fore. But now the question is really called here. And these people are being hardened, and they've been hardened over a period of time. Ideologically, many of these people, or at least at the core of this, is this Christian fascist movement that I spoke of before. Others are really diehard racists, and others are people, yes, who are being driven by the workings of the economy themselves. But that's not at the essence of this. It's really not at the essence of this. And in fact, this fascist, I said this the other day on another show here, Steve King from Iowa said, look, our side has 8 trillion bullets, while the other side is busy arguing over what bathroom to go to. And the thing about that, there's two things that you have to get there. One is that these divisions have been hardened into one side that is actually openly talking about and preparing for a civil war if they don't get to maintain their dominance over the rest of society. And the other side is being led by a Democratic Party and illusions of the nature of the system and is being divided and actually somewhat cannibalizing itself, frankly, right now with, you know, busy in a blame game that goes on and turning what was a really important movement, the Me Too movement, into something that's just a gotcha kind of game on one level and not actually taking this on. But look, when he said arguing over the bathroom, that should tell us two things. One is that that's a very righteous cause, actually, the struggle of transgender people. But more, that is an indication that there are groups of people in this country who are deeply oppressed by this system, and they need to be coalesced to understand that what they're up against here is a qualitative change. And you've already seen that all the LGBTQ rights that have been won over the last decade or 2.5 decades could be wiped away in the snap of a finger. We've already seen a situation where what's going on with immigrants and not just demonization, degradation, and deportation, which is certainly President Obama was a deporter in chief and actually is complicit along with Hillary Clinton in what went down in Honduras a few years ago that actually is driving people out of their country, the overthrow of the government there in a coup d'etat, which they supported and now has created an even worse situation there. But you're seeing some qualitative changes. And the way to get at this thing is not to rely on the very people who have an interest in this system, the Democratic Party, but to actually pull together and start organizing. The ultimate program of Refuse Fascism is that ultimately, and it better be soon, way before the 2020 election, people need to be gathering in cities and protesting, not just in one protest, but in a protest that continues, the kind of thing that was done in South Korea 2 years ago, the kind of thing that began in Egypt, the kind of thing that just took place in Algeria, where people go in the streets and they stay in the streets until their demand is met. And there should be just one demand. The Trump-Pence regime must go. And if that demand is what's at the center, then you could unite people with very varied interests and perspectives on things to say, this has to stop. And then we can argue while we're doing that of to what kind of future we want.
Well, tell me this now. One of the things, because even as you're talking about that, so what do you say to people then? You know, when you like, look, there's a question here. The demonstrations have not been that big. The divisions of people about what road to take, you know, what's going to resolve this. All of these things, there's not that much, you know, well, there isn't fighting in the streets. There's not, you know, the presence of a large grouping of people anywhere, I think, that's actually, you know, really sort of rolling out the anti-fascist, we got to get rid of Trump, all this, you know, this is not intolerable, we're not going to allow it to stand. So how do you change that?
Well, I just want to be clear that Refuse Fascism is calling for sustained nonviolent protests, okay? This is not a call for fighting in the streets. I mean, I understand these fascists are looking for a brawl, but that's actually not how we're going to defeat this. We are calling for for mass nonviolent protests in the streets that continue day after day and that grow in strength to the point when millions of people in the street and creates the kind of crisis where the kinds of things that might be in this Mueller report could be utilized by people in the ruling class, actually, to then remove the regime. There's plenty of stuff there. But if you're thinking that the people who have an interest in the system are going to do this for you, you're deluded. And look, just one thing, Michael, I just want to bring out what, you know, for some time, Jerry Nadler, who's now head of the Justice Committee, I guess, in the House, and Nancy Pelosi, head of the House, have said impeachment's off the table. But in Nancy Pelosi's last statement on this, she said, look, Donald Trump just isn't worth it, which is a very revealing statement, because to people who run this system, it may not be worth it for the kind of political upheaval that we're talking about. Political, again, nonviolent, but millions of people in the street day after day is a big crisis for a country, for any country, and certainly for this country. It's not worth it to her, but isn't it worth it to the masses of people? The masses of immigrants, the masses of black people, the masses of women, the masses of LGBTQ people, and the masses of everybody, white people who care about justice and care about the environment and care about these wars. And there's a tremendous interest of the majority of humanity in the world and even the majority of people in this country to drive this regime out. So to Nancy Pelosi, this may not be worth it. It is worth it to us, but we have to stop relying on the likes of her and that method of trying to resolve us. It won't resolve us. You know, even Michael Cohen has said Donald Trump might not go if he lost the election. This is serious business. This is not hyperbole. They may not want to tell you this, but these Democrats know that. One of their leading people, Madeleine Albright, wrote a whole book on fascism.
All right. So I got one more question, and then we're going to move on. But I'm really enjoying this. Okay. It's like, all right, but here's the thing now. This is the big question. So what the hell are you going to do about it? people are looking at this, and there's actually, it's really important. A number of times you mentioned this thing, we don't have an endless amount of time, you know, and there's actually, you know, and there's, what is it going to take in your mind to really, to get these people who are, you know, concerned, but who don't see the necessity for what you're talking about? How are these people going to come out in the streets? Before, I mean, you know, and you're talking about Trump is going to all out to, you know, who knows what would happen in relation to the next election, you know?
Well, look, people got to wake up. And speaking for myself and for revolutionaries, we're out there trying to wake people up. I mean, here's one example of something that we're doing, We've gone out and put out these signs all over the place that said hashtag BEB. Nobody knew what it was, but we had lots of people guessing. People were writing in. Then about 2 weeks ago, we did a press conference down at City Hall here in Los Angeles. BED stands for Bourgeois Electoral BS for that radio audience, and you can figure out what that means. The fact is, we have to go to people. You're being played here. You're being made to think you have something to say about the direction of society, and who you're actually supporting this is not going to actually solve this problem of fascism. You know, even if Trump himself went, you do have Mike Pence, but you have an entire political apparatus in the Republican Party and a base of 30 million people who are very solidly united now behind finally getting what they've wanted to have, the kind of rule they've wanted to have that they perceive in their interests to be what dominates in America. You don't drive that out on November 4th in 2020. This is serious business. So people need to wake up. Now, for the revolutionaries part, we're waking people up to the whole nature of the system, including around this. And that's why we initiated and support the initiative of Refuse Fascism. That people need to get into that organization now and make it happen. This is a very broad basis of unity. There's a lot of room for people to get into it. There's a lot of room for other groups to continue doing what they're doing, but to be organizing now for the time when we can get out into the streets. And when something like this Mueller report comes out, like it did last week or other revelations, to get out there in massive numbers. I'm glad to hear there was more than 80 people downtown. And my understanding is the demand of that was to release a report, which is a just demand. It should be released. But it has to go beyond that. It has to not continually drive people back into relying on the workings of a system that does not want to actually mobilize you. Because if you did mobilize gay people, immigrants, black people, everybody who goes up against the deep fault lines of this system. What I mean by fault lines, these forms of oppression that deeply affect people. If you united all those people, some people might want to take this farther. And that's what the Democratic Party does not want to unleash, whereas the Republican Party is happy to unleash their social base around a reactionary fascist program. And they are preparing to fight. And this is going to be one-sided. You know, these people want a civil war. We want a revolution. Now, Refuse Fascism is an organization that's not aiming for that, but it is aiming for uniting everybody who is concerned about justice to get out into the streets and demand the regime go.
Very important point. Andy, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. And we'll have you back sometime over the next period of time.
Okay. Well, we'll be in L.A. through early May. So.
All right. So you'll
but
be here.
But there's also telephones.
Yes. And you'll also be here. And we'll actually next time we'll have the time to actually allow people to call in and pose their questions to you. All right.
Okay. Thanks
right,
a lot,
thank
Michael.
You.
Take care.
All right. Before we go to our next segment, I want to play the trailer from the talk that Andy Z mentioned earlier. And this is a talk by Bob Avakian. And the talk is, "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. A better world is possible." The full talk, plus questions and answers, can be found at revcom.us or refusefascism.org.
We are confronted by, we are now being ruled by, a fascist regime, relentlessly assaulting civil rights and liberties, and openly promoting bigotry and inequality. This has caused disgust, anger, and agonizing among huge numbers of people. And there have been many important acts of resistance, big and small, to the continuing outrages committed by this regime and its supporters. But the regime remains in power and is determined to ride roughshod over all obstacles to carry out its monstrous agenda. And the need for a massive outpouring of people, acting together nonviolently but with sustained determination to create a political situation where this regime cannot remain in power, cries out. The organization Refuse Fascism, refusefascism.org, has put forward a call and a plan and is actively building for that mass mobilization to begin on November 4. So this poses sharply the immediate urgent challenge we face. Calling this regime fascist is not an insult, but speaks to the terrible reality. There is a direct line from the Confederacy to the fascists of today, and a direct connection between their white supremacy, their open disgust and hatred for LGBT people as well as women, their willful rejection of science and the scientific method, their raw America First jingoism and trumpeting of the superiority of Western civilization, and their bellicose wielding of military power, including their expressed willingness and blatant threats to use nuclear weapons, to destroy countries with the finger of a demented bully on the nuclear button. A regime that without exaggeration threatens not just greatly heightened suffering for the masses of humanity, but the very existence of humanity itself. It used to be a common saying, to the person of the right, order is more important than justice, while for the person of the left, it is the opposite. Now the question is put squarely to liberals and really to everyone. Which, after all, is more important? Order, even if that is the order of fascism, with everything that means? Or justice, even if that means stepping outside of our comfort zone and putting ourselves on the line to prevent this fascism from consolidating its rule and fully implementing its program? Whether we consider ourselves revolutionaries, convinced of the need for a radical overturning of the system and thorough transformation of society, or we believe that it is possible to bring about changes that will lead to a more just society within this system, whether our understanding is that America is not and cannot be a force for good in the world, or we hope it still can become that, all of us need to come together and act together with the urgency that corresponds to the terrible present and the gravely imperiled future that this fascist regime represents for humanity, and with the conviction that something far better is necessary and possible. Thousands must be organized to take to the streets in cities all over the country, beginning on November 4. Overcoming fear and feeling the strength of their common cause and action and their common aspiration and determination. Making clear their resolve to not just make a statement, but to continue, and more than that, to spread and multiply their numbers and impact until millions have been mobilized and refuse to stop until the demand has been met. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go.
That was Bob Avakian, and the piece was "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America. A Better World Is Possible." We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with Satsuki Ina, so stay tuned. Yeah, that's the kind of thing you just don't want to stop listening to, right? All right, and it's Function Underground, and it's by We the People, right? All right, now, as I started off the show with earlier, I want to read this thing. It's in February of 1942, President Roosevelt signed an executive order 9066, which said that Americans of Japanese descent living in West Coast cities would be relocated to internment camps until the end of World War II. And my next guest she is someone who has been she's been very involved in this. She was involved in that when she was a child. Her name is Satsuki Ina, and she was born in the Tule Lake Segregation Center, a maximum security concentration camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. And we're going to get Satsuki on the phone right now because we have a lot of questions to ask her. We have a lot of things about the similarities between what is happening now and what was happening back then. Satsuki, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on the show.
Yeah, definitely. Now, tell people what actually, you know, you have an experience, the Japanese-American experience here in this country, which is different than, you know, you can look at a lot of, there's a lot of places, a lot of other people and nationalities and whatnot who have, you know, come under the heels and been hit hard by the system. But there's something unique about what happened to Japanese-Americans on the West Coast in early 1942. Let's talk about that as sort of to frame this thing first.
Sure. So it used to be unique, and now it's being repeated again, which was people like my parents were forcefully removed from their homes in San Francisco without any due process and incarcerated in horse stalls and then eventually so that was called the temporary detention facility. And then we were moved to more permanent military compound surrounded by 10-foot barbed wire fences and armed guards if you had 1/16th Japanese blood and you lived on the West Coast, whether you were a baby in an orphanage or an elder in a hospital, you were removed and incarcerated. And my parents were incarcerated for 4.5 years. And I was born in one of the most stringent maximum security prisons of all of the 10 that were developed and built during that period.
Now, just so people know, there were 120,000 Japanese-Americans who were declared suspects and imprisoned simply because of their descent?
Yes, that we were, again, this is a similar language that we're hearing today, which is that we were a threat to national security. And there were actually trumped up stories that we were in some way assisting the Japanese military with potential spy activity, sabotage, and fifth column activity, when in the end there was never anyone of Japanese descent living on the West Coast who was ever charged with any crime.
And people who were in the camps and stood up against it and refused to go along with the accusations and to just bow over to the system, they actually paid a very heavy price. Your father was one of them. Can we talk about that?
Sure. So, it's the psychology of captivity is kind of at the base of it, where the government used the language and the terminology that was spread throughout the country to view us. Anybody who protested, not as protesters or dissidents or people demanding their human and civil rights, but more as troublemakers and potential spies and pro-Japan loyalists. And in that way, during and after the war, even our own community saw people like my father who protested, who were dissidents, as people who had betrayed America, when in fact my father says that he was standing up for the Constitution that he believed in.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you and your brother and your mother, as you said, were transferred to a camp in Texas. Let's talk about one. Why were you separated, and then what was your experience in that camp in Texas?
So we were separated, and there was a lot of family separation for anybody who did protest. Were identified as troublemakers without, again, any due process, and were removed. And so my father was taken from us in Tule Lake and sent to Bismarck, North Dakota, a Department of Justice internment camp. And when the camps were closing, so this is after the war had ended, we were still incarcerated. So families that were going to be deported, although my parents were both American citizens, were transferred to Crystal City, Texas, which was a family detention facility. And so Bismarck, North Dakota closed down, and my father was brought back to Crystal City, where we were reunited, and the plan was that we were to be deported to Japan.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking to, and actually, I have to say this really quick, Satsuki, so we can get this through. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking to Satsuki Ina, who was born in the Tule Lake Segregation Center and is one of the people who has organized a whole protest around the, involving the people who are survivors of, who are surviving, and people who know about and who stand up against what happened to the Japanese American people back in the 1940s. And it's actually, it's very heavy that people are standing up around this and bringing out what we're going to talk about now. But now, Satsuki, let's talk about this, because, you know, when you say your family went to the South Texas Family Residential Center, and you were talking about that, then you come back. How did you come on the fact that what existed when you were a child is actually existing and even in even more heinous form now?
Well, I think, at some level, just hearing the rhetoric, the language that was used to describe immigrants as rapists and terrorists, and that they were a threat to our economy, that they were an unassimilable race, is all resonant from the language that was used to justify that we were a national security risk in 1942 and as a basis for being removed. And so I think it alerted many of us in the Japanese American community that this was, again, an inhumane policy that was being developed. And again, the same experience of the solution being mass incarceration and cruel, unjust, inhumane treatment of people of color.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about what happened when you went down to Texas.
So on March 30th, several of us who were at Crystal City, Texas as children organized a Japanese American community. And there were 60 of us who were either descendants or actual survivors of the incarceration during 1942. So many of us are in our 70s and 80s. And we declared that we would go back and stand with the immigrants who are being subjected to mass incarceration. If we had to take our canes, our hearing aids, and our white hair, we were going to protest in ways that America didn't protest when we were disappearing from our classrooms and our jobs and our neighborhoods. We wanted to educate people about the fact that this was in fact a repetition of the of what the government eventually determined was a result of racism and hysteria and the failure of political leadership.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that when I was reading up on this, one of the things that really struck me is, you know, you went down there and you went to the Family Residential Center and you noticed that it really wasn't, you know, one, there wasn't, there was a lot you saw as similar to what had happened to you, or you were familiar with what was going on, at least in the broad sweeps. But you also said that the system tried to present this whole center, this whole prison camp for children, as a child development center. And you stood up against
right.
that. Let's talk about that.
Right. So in order to avoid meeting the requirements of the Flores settlement, these private prison corporations were looking for a way to keep these children in the prison camps because, you know, they would profit from it. So to avoid losing that, they were applying to the state board to qualify as child development centers. So many of us who I'm a family therapist, and there were social workers and several people that gathered to testify about the conditions that we saw when we visited the prison camps, which was no place a child should ever have to live. And in circumstances that were so familiar to many of us who were children incarcerated during World War II.
Give people a sense of what those circumstances were, though, because I think it's important for people to have an actual something that can actually sit in their head and shock the hell out of them.
Well, so you mean in visiting the site, right?
Yes, yes.
Going inside, yes. So I went in as a visitor and really to observe and evaluate the trauma that the children were exposed to. And I saw mothers and children who were still in a very serious state of trauma. And they told me things like the children were losing weight because the food was covered with black pepper. And I verified that this last weekend when I went back for another protest, that this was at Carnes, that the women who complained were told that this was a way to discourage others from wanting to cross the border. The other thing that I noticed that was appalling to me was all the prison guards had commercial water bottles hanging off of their belts. And the mothers were saying that the water was terrible and the children weren't drinking the water. And when I asked her what was wrong with the water, she said it smelled heavily of chemicals. So when I went out to talk to people to find out what was going on with the water, the one volunteer who had been there for a while said, "Look around, what do you see?" And there were these giant fracking machines all around the facility. And I learned that they have to drill these chemicals into the ground in order to get to the oil that they're seeking, and that the FDA has approved it as drinkable water. But those prison guards weren't drinking that water. And so these children, this one little girl who said that the mother said that she couldn't sleep at night. She had these night terrors. And when I talked to the little girl to ask her what would happen when she was trying to go to sleep, and she said the dogs. And the mother explained to me that when they crossed the border, they were told by their coyotes that brought them across to put their arms out and say asylum and that they would be taken care of. But in fact, the little girl was chased and terrified by these dogs that the Border Patrol chased her with. And so she had nightmares of the teeth right in front of her face. And then she was afraid to go to school, and she was refusing to go to school. And when I talked to her and asked her why she was afraid to go to school, she said that, "I'm afraid that if my friend isn't in the classroom, I know that she's dead." Oh. And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And the mother explained to me that everybody knew that if the kid disappeared, that they had been deported back to the country that they were trying to escape. And the little girl knew that they would be victims of assault and killings. So this child lived in a nightmare at home, lived in a nightmare trying to get to the U.S. border, and then continued the nightmare as they were treated as criminals, thrown into a cement box of a room with no beds until they were handcuffed and then transported to the what they call the Family Residential Center. Again, euphemistic language that's very familiar to us. Mm-hmm. We were not relocated or interned. We were arrested and imprisoned unjustly.
Right. Now, we have about 2 or 3 minutes here, and I really want to get this question in, which is to step back a little bit and the connection between what happened to Japanese people in 1942 and what's going on now. In a way, you've been speaking to this, but I wanted to know if you had any particularly sharp thoughts about the connection between those two events.
Well, I think it's best stated in last weekend. There were 60 of us that went back to Crystal City, and then 45 miles away, virtually on the same road, to the Dili detention facility. And we brought with us Japanese taiko drums that came from Denver and New York so that the children might be able to hear us from outside of the detention facility. And we put a call out to our community across the country. Japanese Americans sent us 25,000 folded paper cranes for us to hang on the fence so that the children might see the bright colors and know that we are standing with them, that we are going to protest their incarceration, that we want to end detention and criminalization of innocent people seeking asylum.
Mm-hmm. All right, Satsuki, anything else you want to add?
And the connection I think that's most important is that in 1942, no one did that for us. And we are not going to be silent like America was when we were incarcerated.
Very, very important. And thank you very much for bringing that up. All right?
Thank you.
Okay, Satsuki, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again sometime. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and that was Satsuki Ina, who was born in the Tule Lake Segregation Center, a maximum security concentration camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. And we were talking about the protests, and we were talking with her about what happened back then and the protests she helped organize of World War II camp survivors protesting the caging of Central American refugees in Texas and throughout the rest of the country, wherever they are and are caged. All right. I want to thank everybody for participating in the show today. I want to thank Andy Z for joining us and opening this show up. It was really, and people really got to, you know, look, go to the to revcom.us, go to Refuse Fascism, get involved in this stuff, see what's going on, all right? And don't forget today at Protest Trump in LA, the Trump Pence regime must go 5 p.m. Sunset Boulevard and North Elm Drive in Beverly Hills. Saturday, April 6th, a public remembrance at the border organized by Refuse Fascism LA, 323-946-1742. And check my Facebook page for all the links and events, all right? I want to thank all of my guests today, Satsuki Ina, Andy Z. I want to thank my board op for today, Teddy Robinson. How are you doing? How are you, man?
And I thought you almost said Teddy Riley.
Yeah, right. Well, man. Okay. And anyway, and Henry Carson and everybody else that was part of making the show possible today. And we're going to go out now with 99 Revolutions from Green Day. And I'll talk to you again next week. It's not